Pleasant Saturday evening, one and all, and welcome to our continuing coverage of the Major League Baseball playoffs here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Mike Wilner, and we are getting you set for Game 4 of the World Series. It's not exactly a pitching matchup you would ever expect to see in a World Series game. Jason Vargas against Ryan Vogelsong. I mean, Vogelsong did pitch pretty well for the San Francisco Giants last time around when they were in the World Series against the Texas Rangers and won it. But it's not a name that, you know, sends shockwaves through whatever. But in his last World Series start, Ryan Vogelsong threw 5 2/3 shutout innings as part of a 2-0 Giants win back in Game 3 of 2012. Jason Vargas has never pitched in the World Series before, but he did throw well in the American League Championship Series in the Royals' sweep of the Baltimore Orioles. Vargas threw Game 4 and gave up a run on 2 hits over 5 1/3 innings in the series clinching 2-1 win for the Kansas City Royals. So they've pitched well. They've earned their starts. But, yeah, Jason Vargas and Ryan Vogelsong, it's not exactly a compelling pitching matchup. Although, as we know, the Royals only need 6 innings. It is the Blue Jay A Day pregame show. And today our guest will be DeMarlo Hale, who is the Blue Jays' bench coach, John Gibbons' right-hand man in the dugout. I'll take your phone calls at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell in long distance, 1-888-666-0590. And we'll also hear from Jonah Carey, who is at the World Series, frequent contributor here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And it's 33 years and a week ago that Blue Monday happened. Jonah wrote about the Expos in his book, Up, Up, and Away. He also wrote about the Tampa Bay Rays in his book, The Extra 2%, which makes him more than qualified to comment on a whole bunch of things that are happening right now in baseball with Andrew Friedman moving to the Dodgers, Joe Maddon exercising an opt-out, becoming a free agent, and a report out of New York that Stuart Sternberg, the owner of the Rays, discussed moving the team to Montreal among other options. So we'll be joined by DeMarlo Hale. And again, phone lines will be open. They are open right now. You can give us a call at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Later on, we will hear from Jonah Carey. The Hank Aaron Award has been handed out just now. And that's sort of for the, I guess, most outstanding offensive player or most outstanding player as opposed to MVP. And I know that Major League Baseball is trying to get this Hank Aaron Award to kind of be up there with the MVP. And it's supposed to be, well, you don't have to worry about the whole definition of valuable. It's just the most outstanding player. Mike Trout has won it in the American League. Giancarlo Stanton has won it in the National League, despite the fact that Stanton missed the last month of the season after getting hit in the face by that Mike Fiers fastball. So, hearty mazel tov to the both of them. Mike Trout should very well finish, or at least follow up this Hank Aaron Award with his first MVP. A lot of people believe it should be his third in a row, but he is more than likely to win the MVP this year in the American League. Giancarlo Stanton, not more than likely to win the most valuable player in the National League. That is probably going to go to Clayton Kershaw. Votes, ballots all sent in prior to the playoffs. So the playoffs don't really mean anything. They can't mean anything as far as those preseason awards are concerned. Looking ahead to the ball game tonight, it's obviously a huge one for the San Francisco Giants. Don't want to fall behind 3-1. There was a report from Peter Gammons that Madison Bumgarner was very, very vocal about starting tonight so that he could try to bring the Giants back into the series and potentially start game seven on short rest as well. Bumgarner has come out and said there is exactly zero truth to it. He had never made any demand about starting tonight. He was preparing himself to start either game four or game five. And Giants manager Bruce Bochy doesn't want him to alter his routine. He's never pitched on 3 days rest in his entire career, and they're not going to start that now. They trust in Vogelsong, which is fine to say. Obviously, you'd rather have 70% of Madison Bumgarner out there than 100% of Ryan Vogelsong out there. But Bochy's going to leave it the way it is. And if it gets to a game seven, you would hope that Bumgarner would be available in some way in relief. Because, again, game seven will be Tim Hudson against Jeremy Guthrie if it winds up going that far. The Kansas City Royals with a 2-1 lead on the San Francisco Giants in the World Series. The Royals are starting their same group, same lineup as yesterday. Ned Yost doesn't like to vary his lineups. He changed it up for yesterday's game with no Billy Butler, no DH. He will run out the same eight in the same order, plus Jason Vargas on the hill. The San Francisco Giants have made one change to their lineup, and that is that Travis Ishikawa will not start against the lefty Vargas. It will be Juan Perez who gets the start in left field. Michael Morse is fighting a side injury. They don't want to put him out there in the outfield. He is a terrible outfielder when healthy. So you can imagine what he'd be like when he's lost a step. So they do lose a bat because Juan Perez, honestly, just can't hit at all. And we will see what happens there. Royals and Giants, game four of the World Series coming up. But first, we talk to Blue Jays bench coach DeMarlo Hale. He's going to be next on the Blue Jay Day pregame show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is your home for all the Major League Baseball playoffs on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back. Baseball Control in Toronto. Mike Wilner here with you. It is the Sportsnet Radio Network. And it is the Blue Jay A Day pregame show. We're taking your calls at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and 1-888-666-0590. Game four of the World Series coming up. Kansas City Royals at San Francisco trying to take a 3-1 lead on the World Series. The Giants trying to knot it up and make sure that they can take this thing back to Kansas City with a chance to win it. The first pitch is 55 minutes away. It'll be thrown by Ryan Vogelsong. Jason Vargas answers for the Kansas City Royals. I'm Mike Wilner. DeMarlo Hale, the Blue Jays bench coach, joins us on our Blue Jay A Day pregame show on this Saturday evening. And DeMarlo, thanks so much. Really appreciate you taking the time for us tonight.
Oh, no problem, Mike. How you doing?
Doing well. How's your off season going?
So far, so good. A little relaxation. Being a sports fan, catching up on some college football and the NFL, and basketball season around the corner, and no doubt the World Series is in full effect, and it seems like a good series that's building for sure.
Yeah, it's been, you know what, for a playoffs that hasn't been long. You know, they're not a single series has gone the limit. There have been more sweeps than not. It's still been a pretty good, pretty close, pretty intense playoff all the way through.
No, it has. And, you can look at these two teams. They've played very good baseball. And, the Royals, their journey, that what they want, 8 in a row, in the playoffs. And that's 2 sweeps. So it's been a good playoff. Yes, it has.
It really has. Do you have, I know you worked with Buck Showalter for a long, long time. The Orioles got knocked out. Do you have a horse in this race? Are there any connections for you that you'd prefer to see the Royals or Giants win?
No, you know what? I look at it, the team that plays, the better baseball and also, performs well in certain situations, whether it's situational hitting or moving runners or making big pitches. You know, I don't have a favorite. I'm just enjoying the game, you know, from a spectator. That's for sure, Mike.
Well, that's good to hear. Is it a style of play you like? I mean, for me, people are going nuts about the Royals with the bunting and the stealing bases and all that stuff. But for me, I think what's more important is how shut down their bullpen has been and how airtight their defense has been, rather than all the small ball stuff. But it does seem to run counter to the way teams in the American League are used to winning ball games.
Yeah, I mean, it is a different, you know, they see the Royals' speed is a big factor and, you know, much talked about. But, you know, pitching and defense is, I think, is maybe at the forefront of where they at, you know. And I know their speed is a factor in the outfield. But, you know, you look at their defense in the infield, they've hounded the ball and took care of the ball. And, you know, I think it's a big factor when you're talking about winning close games, and they've been in close games. So, you know, you put yourself in position to Mike to have a chance to win, you know, especially close games.
And it certainly helps that you really only have to have the lead after six and then the game is over. And the Royals are the first team in the history of Major League Baseball to have three relievers throw more than 60 innings and have an ERA under 1.5. These guys are unbelievable.
Yeah, and you know, they have, you know, locked down their roles that they've been in. But, you know, I'm sure the Giants are feeling confident about themselves in terms that, you know, we're going up there to compete and, you know, we'll try to get a run or two off these guys in situations. And, you know, that's the beauty of the game. You know, every game kind of creates his own kind of storyline. And, you know, it's been good, you know, but the Giants are a good team, and, you know, it's a veteran team who's been there over the years, so I don't think it's no panic there, you know, especially with Bochy at the head. You know, there's a calm demeanor about them as well.
The only panic in San Francisco is their second baseman.
Good point.
So that may...
He's a good player, too.
Yeah, he's something else. Very surprising, actually, at how well he's done in his rookie season. But, yeah, you mentioned Bruce Bochy, and his reputation around the game is pretty phenomenal. And it kind of speaks to the whole manager's only as good as his players, but the good ones, I don't know. I don't even know how to handle it when I talk about the effect of a manager. You managed 9 years in the minor leagues. You have managed beside – some of the greats in Buck Showalter and Terry Francona. Bruce Bochy, we see him in the World Series seemingly every other year. He seems to be that sort of calm face when everything's falling apart around it. He always says the right things. He pushes a lot of the right buttons. There are people talking about Bruce Bochy as a Hall of Fame manager, and I kind of think that they're on the right track there.
Yeah, and I think some of the intangibles that, you know, fans might not see is, you know, the effect that he has on the men that he's managing, you know, and not only, you know, is it in the dugout, but it's in the clubhouse too, you know, it's just interacting, you know, and both managers have done a good job, and, you know, you have to tip your hat to them. It's not easy to get to the World Series, Mike. And when you get there, you know, you want to be prepared as much as you can, but also you want your players to relax, you know, because the stage is big and, you know, kind of like just do what you do. I know that's easily said, but, you know, I think both managers have done a very good job.
Ned Yost for the Kansas City Royals, taking a lot of heat for some of his tactics in the game. And I don't know how closely you're watching, so I don't know if I want to discuss specific things that Ned Yost has done. But the one thing really stunned me last night was that he let his pitcher hit with a runner on when he was only going to get another batter or two out of him. And I you know, I don't want you to criticize, so I'm not gonna ask you about stuff like that. But the glare does get a lot bigger for the managers when you get to this point in the season, and it's got to be difficult to shut out what everybody's chirping about you, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, and you know, one thing I've often said is that, you know, being a bench coach, you don't know what it's like being in that manager's chair until you're in that manager's chair. And you got to keep a perspective that, you know, Yost know his team better than, you know, any other manager in the game, you know, and his players have responded to him, you know, from their struggles in the season to them getting hot to, you know, their drive to the playoffs, you know, the wild card on to the division. So, you know, the players, when you think about it, Mike, the players have a sense of, okay, this is what the manager's doing. Let's go, you know. And that's probably the biggest thing, because as long as the players are competing, whatever situation the manager chooses, you know, and they're competing at a level, you know, they're always going to be second guesses. But, you know, here he is up 2-1 in the World Series in game four here, you know, about to start in another 45 minutes or so. And you know, he's in a good position.
He certainly is. All right. And a few people are calling in wanting to talk to you, and I want to let them ask you a question in a second. But there was one more. Well, we had a long post-game last night when Joe Maddon exercised his opt-out, and he's now a free agent, and everybody seems to want Joe Maddon. The Blue Jays do not. They have a manager that they're very happy with. And you talked about those intangibles and the stuff that we don't see, the stuff that goes on in the dugout before the game once the doors are closed. I've always been someone, first of all, I've always been a big fan of John Gibbons as a tactician. But I've always been someone who says that even with my inside access, I can never know anything about you guys except what you choose to show me, because there's so much behind closed door stuff, and there's so much that you can, you know, so many faces you can put on, and that you can finally let your hair down when the clubhouse is really yours and only yours. So tell me from the inside after 2 years, what your impressions of John Gibbons, the manager, are that you can maybe share with the fans, a lot of whom are on the fence about him.
Well, John Gibbons is a good manager, and you know, he has a feel for the game, because there are certain times in a season that, you know, your feel for the game or what might be about to happen or what could happen, you know, plays a bigger part that day. And then there's the statistical data that, you know, goes along with, you know, making some decisions, you know, that sometimes, you know, you go with those statistical data that might give you a snapshot of a vantage that's for you. But then there are times where, you know, maybe you don't have the strength of your bullpen, or you don't have the length in your starting pitcher, that, you know, you have to make some decisions that are at that moment, and it's just a feel. You know, you looking at the game, you seeing the swings, you know, who's coming up. So I know I just said a lot, but, you know, I'm saying that it's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, John Gibbons has done an excellent job. I really feel, in terms of managing the game, and also, you know, understanding where his players are at, you know. And, you know, we've made a pretty good adjustment from the year 2013, you know, to 2014. And, you know, we were in position to do something better. And, you know, that month of August kind of, you know, shot us in the foot, you know, had us lip it a little bit, if that's a good analogy to say. But
sure.
I'm very happy to be a part of John Gibbons' staff. You know, he let his coaches you know, have an opinion. He let his coaches, you know, coach their department, and yet he knows and sees what's going on. So, and I think that's a very good characteristic of a good manager.
All right, good to hear. We have a couple of people who want to talk to you, and we'll keep you for another just a couple of minutes.
All right.
So Rocky is in Markham, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Rocky, say hi to Blue Jays bench coach DeMarlo Hale.
How are you guys this evening?
Good. How you doing, Rocky?
I'm good, thank you. My question to you is this: you guys made a 9-game improvement from 2013 to 2014, and my question to you is this: what do you think the Jays need to do this offseason in order for them to make that playoff push or make that jump to become a playoff or a championship contender team?
That's a good question, Rocky, and I think that's where, you know, we are at. What our thoughts during this offseason, you know, you try to understand that, one, you have to beat your division. You know, and when I mean beat your division, you have to play good against your division. You know, those teams are very good, and, you know, they're going to do some things, too. I think some things has been settled in terms of groundwork that, you know, we know how we can win. I think health is a big issue. You know, when you lose, you know, the middle of your order, that plays a factor. You know, your bench has to do things a lot more than what they roll called for. So I think health is a factor. And, you know, this year we've done some shifting and put our heads together with some statistical data that I think was positive. You know, we got some numbers back that was much more positive from 2013 to this past season. So those things are good. And I think the third thing, I don't want to talk so long, but the third thing is that, you know, we have to pitch better, and our starting pitcher has come along, and there were some surprises with, you know, Stroman and Hutchinson. You know, I'm not saying surprising because they're talented, but they handled themselves very well, so that's good to see. And then Burley and Dickey was those kind of guys who, you know, pitched the 200 innings, but It comes down to staying healthy and playing consistent baseball. When you get pitching and defense, you know, you put yourself in a position to, you know, play meaningful games in September.
And I think that the hardest part, you know, it was, you talk about losing the middle of the order, Adam Lind, Brett Laurie, Edwin Encarnacion, all out together for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You weren't playing so well when they got hurt, but them being hurt kind of takes away the chance to dig out of it, and the defense that you lost on the left side of the infield was just, I mean, it really showed up how much Brett Laurie means.
Well, you talk about guys who has a track record at this level, you know, and having a track record at this level, players and managers and coaches, teams that you compete against, you know, they have to have a little bit more cautious thought of what that player can do at given times in the game. So, you know, those are some of the things that, you know, I think you could just look at statistically and say that these guys done this and done that, but it's the end game. It's the end game, the decisions that are affected by having those players in the lineup, and not taking nothing away from the guys who helped them or replaced them. They're major league players, but, you know, there are starters in the big league and there are role players or bench players.
Right. And there's very often the more those role players play, we find out exactly why they turn out to be role players and bench players. One more call for DeMarlo, then we'll let you go. Justin is in Thornhill. Justin, say hi to DeMarlo Hale.
Hi, DeMarlo. Good evening, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
My question for you, DeMarlo, is what was it like being in the playoffs with the Orioles before joining the Blue Jays?
Well, the playoffs is a time of the year that's very exciting. You know, you're talking about, you know, eight teams to start, and it's kind of a elimination, and everything is magnified. And I think players and coaches and organization alike, when you go through 162 games, and we use the term, you know, you get to the big dance, or you get to the dance. The big dance is the World Series. But you get to the dance, you have a chance, you know, to get to the World Series. And it's so exciting. Everything is magnified. But it's someplace, it's a place where you want to be because you want to experience it. You want to put your talents on display, you know, to everybody. And you also want to be the one making decisions, you know, and live with it and let the experience kind of, you know, carry you, you know, through the journey and have fun. I mean, it's a great time. It's only going to be one standing, you know, but I think a lot of teams are going to look back that was in the playoffs and say, you know what, we want to get further. And we're going to do what we need to do in the offseason, make some adjustments. And the teams that were close, they're going to do the same. So I enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I can imagine. It must go by incredibly quickly while you're in it as well, too, no?
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, you know, those off days that you have, I mean, you at the park practicing, you up at night, you know, you're trying to get some sleep because you want the next day to come where you can play the game. And, you know, it's a great atmosphere, no doubt. I don't care where you're at, you know, just you playing for all the marbles, so to speak. It's a great thing to be a part of.
Well, we certainly hope that you and the Blue Jays are a part of it next year. One caller mentioned a 9-win improvement from 2013 to 2014. You do that again, and that's 93 wins in a playoff, or 92 wins and a playoff spot. And boy, we'd really like to see that. Thanks so much for your time, DeMarlo. We appreciate it a whole lot, and have a wonderful offseason.
All right, Mike. Appreciate it, man. Anytime. Enjoy.
All right. Thank you, sir. Blue Jays bench coach DeMarlo Hale joining us on the Blue Jay A Day pregame show. We'll step away, and when we come back, we'll talk to Jonah Carey live from San Francisco, and we're going to be talking a little bit of Expos on the eve of Game 4 of the World Series. It's the Blue Jay A Day pregame on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Blue Jay A Day pregame show. Great to have Blue Jays bench coach DeMarlo Hale on with us prior to tonight's Game 4 of the World Series. Kansas City Royals, San Francisco taking on the Giants and leading the World Series 2-1. It is Jason Vargas against Ryan Vogelsong. And I don't know that I ever thought I would say that in getting set for a World Series matchup. But yet, here we are. Jonah Carey is with Grantland.com, is an accomplished author, a former baseball prospectusian, and he joins us right now live and in color from San Francisco. Jonah, thanks a lot for doing this.
I'm on the streets of San Francisco, and there's sirens and joggers, so we'll see. We're going to get lots of ambient noise right now.
That's awesome. We enjoy ambient noise, for sure. There's a little right there. There's a lot of stuff I want to talk to you about and not a lot of time. You're on your way to the ballpark. So first, last night, I'm led to understand, was the first World Series game you ever attended. And that, for someone who's been so baseball for so long, that had to be an awfully special night for you.
Yeah, it was really cool. It's obviously a gorgeous stadium if you've ever been to AT&T Park.
And, sure.
The way that it's set up, they've got the normal press box, and then the playoffs, they usually expand it, whatever stadium you're in. And here they put you at the top of the stadium. which you could say, oh, I don't know about that. But it's actually awesome because you get these sweeping views of the bay, and it's really incredible. So beautiful day slash night at the ballpark as well. The weather was very nice. And it's a World Series, so it was really, really fun and almost emotional, I want to say. It was a really, really cool feeling to be able to do it. And listen, I thank Flying Spaghetti Monster every day for the job that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. And tonight, when you enter the ballpark and the first pitch is thrown, you will double my lifetime total of World Series games attended. I was at Game 1 in 93, what they used to call Sky Dome, and that was incredible. Not as an accredited member of the media, but as a fan, which makes it just a little bit better. So your two with a press pass are equal to my one as a fan. I'll say that.
I think that works.
All right. So did you were you as impressed as the rest of us with the Yosting that was going on last night?
You know, I didn't think that everything that Yost did was bad last night. The Herrera thing was, you know, that he hit
right.
Weird. But I will say this, you know, I don't know if I agree with it, but the guy's consistent. He is so committed to run prevention. That's his deal. Like that's why he puts in Dyson for Butler or Gore for Butler or whoever, or Dyson for Aoki, I guess, and Gore for Butler. So early in the game, like in the sixth or seventh inning, willingly getting up at bats, basically saying, I'm going to put these non-hitters into the game, and I don't care. Like, if I can get to the sixth or seventh, I have to protect the lead, and that's it. And so that's what he's decided to do, and that was why Herrera batted. Now, it was a little weird because, subsequently, they pulled him two batters in the next inning. That's what made it strange. But at least there's some sort of consistency there. And I will say he's gotten better in some ways. You know, he's not conceding the six. He's now going to Herrera earlier in the game. I really liked him bringing in Finnegan last night. I think that was in the seventh where Herrera was getting a little tired.
Yep.
And there were lefties coming to the plate. And so he said, okay, well, I got a really good lefty. Why don't I just use him? I cannot remember. I think it was the first time in a playoff that he broke up the progression of Herrera, Davis, and Holland.
Yep.
But Finnegan is maybe not as good as those guys, but pretty good. And so being able to think outside the box a little bit, I appreciated that. I thought it was a good move. And, you know, nobody's perfect. I think Bochy's made a lot of mistakes too, and ultimately the Royals are two games away from being there.
Right, and that's really what it comes down to. It is a lot of fun to just kind of look at what's going on and say, you know, roll your eyes occasionally, but then watch it work out. That run prevention thing, you're right. He's thoroughly committed to run prevention, but it scares the hell out of me trying not to build on a one-run lead with nine more outs to get. I mean, there's faith, and then, you know, there's a hit batsman, a wild pitch, and a little bleeder that falls in. And no matter how much faith you have in a guy, for me, I would always be trying to build on a one-run lead.
Oh, I'm with you. I think that the correct tactical move was certainly to do that. I think they still had Willingham off the bench, I want to say, at that point in the game, who's, you know, a pretty darn good hitter. And
I saw Butler, too.
Oh, that's right, of course. And Butler, too. So they had options. They didn't go to them. It was strange. And we'll see. You know, here's the thing about baseball. You can make tactical mistakes, and it really might not matter at all. And this happens all the time. You know, leaving Herrera in the game, how much does it reduce your win expectancy? Like 0.4% or something? You know what I mean? Like, it's not a major thing. It's a clear tactical error, but it's just not likely to really bite you in the butt. Whereas, like, if it's football and you, I don't know, I'm a big believer in going for it on fourth down, for instance. So if you won't go for it on fourth and one from the 39-yard line, that's a pretty big tactical error, and that could really come back to hurt you. If you try to punt, you punt out of the end zone, and then you get 19 yards net on your punt. That really hurts you a lot as opposed to going for it. So it's just a different kind of sport, and Yost has made a bunch of tactical mistakes in the playoffs, and the only one that really seemed like it was going to cost him was the home run that Brandon Moss hit in the wild card game. And even then, the Royals came back and they won the game. They should be out of the playoffs. I mean, looked like they were going to lose in the first game, and they got away with it. And since then, you know, he has gotten somewhat better at it. And like I said, he's gotten away with the stuff.
Yeah, he's learning, which is good. Jonah Carey is with us on your way to AT&T Park. So let me ask you, are you getting rained on right now?
Yeah, it just started sprinkling, like, as you were saying, oh, it's welcome in Jonah Carey, which is pretty funny. So, oh, wow, and I'm right under the DirecTV blimp. I actually have reception in my head at the moment, so if you want to watch Showtime, you can watch it. Oh, and there's a rainbow, too. Sorry, I just noticed the rainbow. I thought they were pointing at the blimp. There's a blimp and a rainbow and some sprinkling going on right now.
Fantastic.
I
know you got to go soon, so I want to ask you, you wrote the extra 2% about the Tampa Bay Rays, an organization that's really kind of turned upside down the last week and a half. Joe Maddon, according to Tyler Kepner, who writes, I hope I'm right, for the New York Times. Yep. Tyler said that Joe didn't know that he had an opt-out tied to Andrew Friedman's departure until the Rays told him. So they told him, and he exercised it. He's a free agent right now. I guess I want to know from you just what you think is going to happen now to the Rays. Are they still going to be the smartest, most forward-thinking, and able to make moves with no money and be great team without Friedman and Maddon, and to a lesser extent, I guess, David Price? Are things going to change that much, or have they been left in really good hands?
No, they'll be fine. The guy who's taking over for the de facto GM is Matt Silverman, who was the team president, but it was a very collaborative effort with Friedman and Silverman and Stu Sternberg. They're Wall Street buddies going back a million years, so he'll be fine. And then beyond Silverman, he's probably going to keep that job for a couple of years. They got a whole bunch of young guys. Some of them I used to work with, actually, baseball perspectives, a guy named Chaim Bloom, who might be the next general manager. He's really good. They've got him, James Click, Eric Neander, all these kind of relative known names, 30-something, youngish guys, super smart, and they are all from the same system. You know, the thing about a GM, he's an avatar for the franchise. We talk about Moneyball and Billy Beane's a big star, or Andrew Friedman or whatever, but they're a product of everybody in the organization. There are so many smart people in Oakland's front office, in Tampa Bay's front office, in Boston, that to say, oh, obviously Ben Cherington or Billy Beane or Andrew Friedman gets all the credit, it's a little bit short-sighted. It really is a team effort. So I think they'll be fine there. And on the managerial side, they've got a guy named Davey Martinez, former Expo, actually.
Yep. And former Blue Jay.
That's right. And, very of the Maddon school. He's smart and affable and has a respected clubhouse and whatever. So if they hired him, that'd be great. The pitching coach, Jim Hickey, is terrific. Really, really, really good pitching coach. If he was the manager, that'd be fine. Their AAA manager, Charlie Montoyo, is a good candidate. So there are all kinds of good choices. Friedman and Maddon are losses, certainly, but I don't think it's catastrophic by any means. The bigger thing is, how good are their on-field personnel going to be? Pitching staff will be good. They've got Longoria. We'll see. They need some bats. That's going to be the key, more than who's the GM is, can they get some bats?
So they're not going to fall apart, finish in last place every year, and move to Montreal by 2018?
The moving to Montreal thing made me laugh. Bill Maddon, I guess, the New York Daily News reported that.
Yep.
I am not buying that. Let's put it that way. There's a scenario where that happens in the future, but nothing is imminent. It does depend on Sternberg, obviously. He has to, commit to staying there, and we'll see. He's had some frustrations with trying to find a stadium deal and so forth. But, in the here and now, there's nothing catastrophic that's going on, and I don't expect any collapse or whatever. They might struggle on the field, but that has more to do with that they've drafted poorly since 2008 than, any grand thing with Maddon or Friedman or anything.
For sure. And I know you got to go, but I got one more question for you, because you're the Expos guy. You wrote Up, Up, and Away, still available in bookstores, and a great holiday gift. I'm halfway through it right now. It's a phenomenal book. Again, Up, Up, and Away is the story of the Expos. Do you think that the city of Montreal might start to get used now the way St. Petersburg did in the mid-80s and early 90s as kind of the city that, we could always move a team here if something struggles or if something's not going well? Does it depend on, are they going to need a downtown stadium first? I mean, are we going to hear a lot about Montreal with any struggling franchise the next few years because of what happened last spring training and what might happen this spring training with the huge crowds?
I don't know about that. I don't know if the city can really be considered a viable stalking horse at this point. The city failed last time. I mean, there are all kinds of complicated reasons for it, but the bottom line is baseball didn't necessarily work last time, and they got to work that out. And like you said, they don't have a new stadium and all that. So I think it's one of those situations where if somebody writes a story saying, oh, so-and-so's going to move, or watch out for this, or you could see this, I'm just not buying it. There's too many steps that have to. I'm sorry about that. There's too many steps that have to happen for them to get to that stalking horse point. It's not like football, like the NFL in Los Angeles. Like Los Angeles is a 200 or 800 pound gorilla. If an NFL team wants to move there, that's a big deal. A baseball team potentially moving to Montreal, it doesn't have that same gravitas.
All right, fair enough. But we all, and I know you as well, we certainly hope that something like that's going to happen. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the heck out of the game tonight, and we'll try to make sure everybody buys a copy of Up, Up, and Away.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, thank you. That's Jonah Carey. You can read his work on Grantland.com. More importantly, get his book, because, again, I'm halfway through it right now. It's a fantastic read. And I've always been very expo-friendly, more so after those two spring training games against the Mets, the last 2 days of spring training where 95,000 people came to Olympic Stadium over the course of those that 24 hours for two games. And it was just an incredible experience. I can't wait to go back again next year. The Blue Jays will have another two spring training games in Montreal. And wow, it would be awesome if the Expos came back. And it would be especially awesome if it was the Tampa Bay Rays who went up to Montreal and became the new Expos or whatever they wanted to call them. To have that kind of rivalry with the Blue Jays, which is something we never really got other than Pearson Cups and interleague play until the Expos moved to Washington a decade ago. Game four of the World Series is coming your way. The Kansas City Royals in San Francisco with a 2-1 lead on the Giants. Jason Vargas against Ryan Vogelsong. We'll get you set as we continue on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is your home for all the Major League Baseball playoffs on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
In Toronto. I'm Mike Wilner, and we are getting you set for game four of the World Series. It's the Kansas City Royals, it's the San Francisco Giants, and it's really interesting to watch the ebb and flow of a series and how the numbers change. And this is why I don't get too excited about. Oh, it was funny where people in the fourth inning of game one were saying, oh, it's over. The Royals, you know, they've woken up. They've realized where they are. They're done. It's not happening. And then after the game, San Francisco wins. When it's over, you see, 10 of the last 11 teams that have won game one of the World Series have gone on to win. Now you hear the San Francisco Giants are 1-8 in the last 9 best of sevens that they've trailed 2-1. Past performance is not an indicator of future performance. When things involve other people, other teams, other situations, honestly, none of that stuff matters, which is why I prefer to sit back, relax, and enjoy. And this has been a most enjoyable postseason. And the hope is that it goes on longer than tomorrow night. I don't have a horse in this race, but I would like to see the Kansas City Royals win. They have been compelling. They've been interesting. They've been exciting. They're winning in spite of a lot of the things their manager is doing. The bullpen has been otherworldly. They have the best outfield defense. You can literally say that the defense they started last night and they're starting tonight with Alex Gordon in left, Jerod Dyson in center, and Lorenzo Cain in right field. Literally, you can say this is among the best outfield defenses in the history of the game. And it's just so fantastic to watch. A lot of reasons to like the Kansas City Royals. And, yeah, the fact that they only won 89 games in the regular season, haven't been in the playoffs in almost 3 decades, all that stuff. So I'm pulling for the Kansas City Royals. But I really don't want them to win tonight and tomorrow and then have the season be over on Sunday. I'm all for days off, don't get me wrong. But I would love to be back in this chair Tuesday and Wednesday for game 6 and 7 of the World Series and have, you know, if there's only going to be one game or one series that goes the distance, because there haven't been any yet so far in this postseason, I kind of want it to be this one. And the first 2 games of the series weren't really especially exciting or compelling. They were both blowouts. Last night was a whole lot of fun. And hopefully tonight lives up to that as well. I don't expect a pitcher's duel with Vargas against Vogelsong, but that may well mean that that's what we're going to get, and it's going to be a lot of fun. The starting lineup for the Kansas City Royals is the same as it was last night for their 3-2 win. The starting lineup for the San Francisco Giants has one difference in it. Juan Perez is playing left field and batting seventh. Travis Ishikawa does not start against the lefty. Ooh, it's a platoon. And it's in the World Series and they have a platoon. See, platoons are okay when they're run correctly. Perez is 2-for-16 so far in these playoffs after hitting 170 with a .224 on base percentage over the course of the regular season. Hitting is not what he does, but apparently they like him. The combination of his bat against lefties plus his glove, then that same combination with Travis Ishikawa. So that's the one change that Bruce Bochy has made in the lineup tonight. Dan Shulman and Aaron Boone have the call, and we can get you out to AT&T Park in San Francisco when we come back. Game 4 of the World Series coming up on the Sportsnet Radio Network.